Exploring soundtracks, shortwave transmissions, incidental music, and more. This is At The Tone with DJ Frederick on The Global Voice. The IMark 4 with a tune called The Sound here on At The Tone. I'm DJ Frederick, and we're spinning a mix of dusty grooves, easy jazz, and a tinge of psychedelic pop from the 1960s through today. In this half hour of At The Tone, we're going to hear some tunes from a Blue Note compilation called Droppin' Science. This is Ronnie Foster, a tune called Mystic Brew. Thank you.
I'm Steve Bauer. I do a program called Smooth Jazz USA. Each week we take a couple of hours to listen to some new music that's been released, some album tracks. I'll share with you some smooth jazz news and more. So to keep up with the latest in smooth and contemporary jazz, join me each week for Smooth Jazz USA. The program airs each Monday at 22 hours Universal. Smooth Jazz USA. It's a listening experience here on the Global Voice.
If you want to listen to the latest editions of all our programs or download them for listening on the go, check out the Program Gallery, part of the Global Voice's website at www.theglobalvoice.info. That's the Global Voice, all one word, .info.
Sacrifice.
Mr. David McCallum and David Axelrod with a tune called The Edge. And we started off with Lou Donaldson, a tune called Think Twice. Two tracks from the Droppin' Science compilation released on Blue Note back in 2008. Well, this is DJ Frederick. You're listening to At The Tone on The Global Voice at theglobalvoice.info. It's time for Pulse of the Planet.
This week marks New Year's Eve by the Julian calendar, and we're in the small village of Ornash, Switzerland, where they're celebrating the holiday of Silvesterklausen. Several masked figures file past us, sporting bells and ornate headdresses over a foot high. I'm Jim Metzner, and this is the Pulse of the Planet. Silvesterklausen is a New Year's celebration here in Ornash, practiced by the Klauser, men of the village disguised in elaborate traditional costumes, bells, and headdresses so large and heavy that they often physically injure the wearer. At dawn on New Year's Eve, the Klauser will trudge single file through the village, stopping in front of select houses. Each Klaus is adorned with either 13 round bells or two giant cowbells strapped to their front and back. They dance and ring their bells in a specific rhythm, announcing their presence to the people at home. Klauser will perform a few of these yodels as a wish for a happy new year to the villager, who rewards them with a drink of wine or cider, and usually some money. After thanks are exchanged, the group will move along until they reach another house on the lane. They'll continue their journey until midnight, when they stop to sing and celebrate in the new year with the rest of the villagers. Our special thanks to Dr. Regina Bendix, Assistant Professor of Folklore and Folklife at the University of Pennsylvania. I'm Jim Metzner, and this is the Pulse of the Planet.
This is Bird Note. In the environmental movement, no single figure stands taller than Rachel Carson. Her work on DDT helped spark an environmental awakening in the 1960s. Some consider Rachel Carson the finest nature writer of the 20th century. In addition to Silent Spring, books such as The Sea Around Us and Under the Sea Wind are evidence of her exquisite literary talent. Carson herself had inspiration from a 19th century writer named Richard Jefferies. His prose poems, like The Pageant of Summer, reveal a profound immersion in nature and a joyful sense of discovery. His work helped Carson develop and write about her own deep sense of connection with the natural world. Here's Jefferies on Summer. Every blade of grass, each leaf, each separate floret and petal is an inscription speaking of hope. Consider the grasses and the oaks, the swallows, the sweet blue butterfly. They are one and all a sign and token, showing before our eyes earth made into life. So that my hope becomes as broad as the horizon afar, reiterated by every leaf, sung on every bough, reflected in the gleam of every flower. For Bird Note, I'm Mary McCann.
Support for Bird Note comes from the Port Aransas Tourism Bureau. Info on February's Whooping Crane Festival and hundreds of species of birds to see year-round at visitportaransas.com.
Están escuchando La Voz Global.
Thank you. Exploring Science in the Sea. On the ice, the Atlantic walrus is slow and lumbering. In the water, though, it's graceful, maneuvering with ease. Until recently, though, it wasn't thought to be an especially deep swimmer. But a recent study found that the walrus can reach depths of a third of a mile. The Atlantic walrus lives mainly in the cold waters around Greenland and Canada. There could be as many as 25,000 of them living in several groups. The walrus's most prominent feature is its tusks. They're used for defense, to cut through ice, and to help pull the walrus out of the water. The animals feed on the ocean floor. They use their sensitive whiskers to detect food, mainly shellfish. They especially like mussels and clams. They dig them out of the muck on the bottom, then hold the goodies with their front flippers. The walrus then puts the edge of the shell up to its mouth, and in just a few seconds, it sucks out the tasty critter inside. Walruses usually find their food in waters that are no more than a few hundred feet deep. Because of that, no one expected them to dive very far. But from 2010 to 2013, researchers followed a group of almost 24 Atlantic walruses using satellite trackers attached to their backs. The scientists found that in the deep water between Greenland and Canada, two members of the group descended to more than 1,600 feet. But the scientists aren't sure why the walruses went so deep. They didn't need to go that far to find food, so there may be another reason for the walruses to go deep. Science in the Sea is a production of the University of Texas Marine Science Institute and is available as a weekly podcast at scienceinthesea.org. I'm Holly Brawley.
And welcome back to At the Tone. I'm DJ Frederick, and you're listening to The Global Voice. We'll be right back. Spinning Wheel from the Droppin' Science compilation here on At The Tone. I'm DJ Frederick. Hopefully my voice will hold out for the rest of the show. But actually, we're going to have a special now proving that you never know what you're going to hear on At The Tone. We're going to hear part one of the Yiddish Radio Project. All that survives from the golden age of Yiddish radio from the 1930s to the 1950s are 1,000 fragile discs rescued from storerooms and attics and restored for a landmark radio series that was originally broadcast on NPR. The Yiddish Radio Project opens a unique window on a lost radio universe. Here's part one of the Yiddish Radio Project.
Welcome to the Yiddish Radio Project. I'm Scott Simon.
WEVD, New York.
WLTA, Brooklyn, New York.
WCNW, operating on a frequency of 1,500 kilocycles.
It all began one day in 1985, when musician and social historian Henry Sapoznik literally tripped over some ancient records in a dusty and cluttered storage room in New York City. There were transcriptions of old radio programs, extra-large aluminum discs made at the time of broadcast. On the faded labels, Sapoznik could make out station call letters, Hebrew writing, and program titles. He paid just a few dollars for the records, searched for the right contraption on which to play them, and then he sat down to listen.
From atop the Lowell State Theater building, your American Jewish Hour. The B. Manischewitz Company, world's largest matzah bakers, happily present Yiddish Melodies in Swing.
This was Yiddish radio, programs produced by and about the Jewish immigrants from Eastern Europe who came to America at the turn of the last century and settled in the Bronx, Brooklyn, and on the Lower East Side of Manhattan.
And now Maestro Sam Medoff and the lads of the Yiddish Swing Tet bring us the rollicking rhythms of Dayenu.
Henry Sapoznik spent the next 17 years scouring the country for more of these recordings. He's rescued more than 1,000 discs in all, over 500 hours of material, and he has collaborated with producers Dave Isay and Yair Reiner to create this series. The programs you'll be hearing are in both English and Yiddish, but the themes are universal. These recordings allow us to go back in time to eavesdrop on a lost world. We begin our tour with a history of Yiddish radio and this project from Henry Sapoznik.
I'm Henry Sapoznik, and this is my mother.
Hello, Henry.
My mother was born in Poland and was 21 when the Nazis invaded.
It's a long story, but thank God we survived and we came to America in 1949. My father had a sister. She took us to her house, but it wasn't the same. We wanted to be on our own. So one day, my husband got dressed up, and he walks, he looks around. A man comes, and he looks like a Jewish man. So he stops him. He said, "We just came to America. I have a wife and a child, and we need an apartment." He looked him over, said, "Come with me." And he showed him, "This is an apartment for you. You want, you can have it." And we moved in. But the first thing my husband bought was a radio. A white radio, plugged in the radio. I hear they speak Yiddish. That was my life.
Yeah, fine.
Everything is meant to be. Right.
She's always right. I grew up in Brooklyn in the late 50s and early 60s when almost everyone seemed to have turned their back on Yiddish. Nothing could be less cool, especially to a music-obsessed kid like me. When I was in my teens, I got into old-time mountain music. And pretty soon, I trekked down to Appalachia to learn from the masters. I was living with and studying fiddle and banjo music of North Carolina with this great old fiddle player named Tommy Jarrell. And Tommy was puzzled that a lot of the people who came down to study music were Jewish. And he said to me one day, he said, "Hank, don't your people got none of your own music?" And it got me thinking, yeah, maybe there are the Yiddish equivalents of Tommy Jarrell. And I found out that there were. I started to collect klezmer, that's traditional Yiddish dance music, on old 78 RPM records. And I set up the first ever Yiddish sound archives at the YIVO Institute, the world's biggest Yiddish research center. It's based here in New York. The word got out. People would bring these records like they were abandoned children, and this was like some orphanage that they said, oh, this is where they're going to take care of these things. So I would just tell them, yeah, bring me more. Pretty soon there was a whole klezmer revival, and there were hundreds of klezmer bands across the country playing this music. It was amazing. A couple of years later, I discovered my first stack of radio discs, and it changed my life.
How many suits do we have?
There's nothing.
Here we are in the epicenter of sound. This is Andy Lancet's lab where the preservation of the Yiddish radio discs happens.
Why?
This is the disc. You get a sense. It's made out of aluminum.
This particular disc came out of a dumpster in Lower Manhattan. Obviously, it didn't weather very well.
For the past 10 years, Andy Lancet's been working his magic restoring these things.
They're generally referred to as acetates. I mean, to be more precise, it's castor oil plasticized nitrocellulose lacquer. But what happens is that the castor
acetates
oil
were not meant for repeated plays, unlike commercial discs. They were very delicate and were meant to keep a record of the shows that were on the air in case a complaint was made by a listener, and then the Federal Radio Commission, later the Federal Communications Commission, could hear it.
And in English. And in English.
Having collected old 78 records for years, I was used to a kind of rehearsed perfection. But putting on these radio shows, they were just real.
Williamsburg, Brooklyn.
Here was something that was completely unself-conscious. Everything was take one. It's like a transmission from another planet, and it's taken light years to get to us.
Their telephone, triangle 52729.
It's like you're back in 1940, sitting there with this old man listening to the radio in his bathrobe.
Schmaltz herring, homemade pickled herring, herring fillet in wine sauce, pickles, Zauerkraut. Mayonnaise, applesauce, apple cheese.
So this is where it started. We're here on the Lower East Side of Manhattan on Christie and Delancey. Back in 1926, this wasn't the park that it is now. It was the site of the Libby Hotel, home of the first Yiddish radio broadcast, the Libby Hotel program.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. You are now tuned in.
And within months, there were Yiddish radio shows on small power stations throughout the New York area. On stations like WBBC, the Brooklyn Broadcasting Company.
WBBC, Brooklyn, New York.
WARD.
This is Ward, WARD.
WVFW.
You are now tuned in to station WVFW, the radio voice of the veterans of foreign wars.
They were going to lose their license, and I think they changed the letters so that they could seem more patriotic. Most of these were infinitesimal. They were tiny, tiny stations. You could only hear them from within the neighborhood they were broadcasting from.
WCNW, operating on a frequency of 1,500 kilocycles.
WCNW had like 50 watts of power. You couldn't even hear it in the studio. But the most famous Yiddish station of all was WEVD. Probably the first listener-supported station in history. It was created in 1926 by the Socialist Party to honor their recently deceased leader, Eugene Victor Debs. And it was taken over in 1932 by the Forward, the Yiddish socialist paper in New York. WEVD was home to the most renowned Yiddish show of all time, The Forward Hour, a lavish variety show that featured everything from extravagant musical numbers to the news performed in rhyme. Everyone listened. Everyone. Ironically, even though we have found hours and hours of some totally obscure Yiddish radio programs that no one ever heard of, only a couple of minutes of the old Forward Hour exist. One of the very few shards that survives is the show's closing theme song, a medley of revolutionary anthems from the Internationale to the Marseillaise. And that's just about all we've got.
Another Forward Hour comes to you next Sunday morning at 11 o'clock. WEVD, New York.
Sloan's Liniment, your faithful friend when muscles ache and pain, presents Gangbusters.
Mainstream radio was about escapism. You turn on the radio and you would have The Lone Ranger or Gangbusters. You would have these shows that were exotic and escapist with these like really larger than life characters.
I own silver! Hi!
Yiddish radio, no one was larger than life. Everyone was life. It was a one-to-one ratio between the listener and the characters on the radio.
How's Mama?
Don't bother her. She has a headache.
I won't bother her. I'll only say hello.
They wanted a mirror. They didn't want a window to look out into another world. They wanted a mirror to see their own world.
I met Shirley, Phil's sister. They arrested him too, and she says they're going to send him to reform school.
If you were a listener to Yiddish radio, and you turned your radio dial a quarter inch to the left or a quarter inch to the right, you would have experienced a completely different universe.
Why are you making so much noise, Papa? So early in the morning.
Early in the morning?
Jews who were portrayed on mainstream radio were totally, totally different than anything people would have encountered in their real lives. You had characters like Mrs. Pansy Nussbaum on the Fred Allen Show.
No.
Oh, Mrs. Nussbaum.
You were expecting maybe Emperor Shapiro Hito?
Mr. Kitzel on Jack Benny.
Say, Mr. Kitzel, what are you getting your wife for Christmas?
I got it already here in this box. It's a beautiful fur coat.
What is it, the fox or sable?
On the label, it's sable. In the box, it's fox.
There were a few exceptions, like the Goldbergs.
That's Molly Goldberg, folks.
A show written by a woman named Gertrude Berg who wanted to portray her own life.
You ready, darling?
Does Mikey know?
You don't know. How could he know, Jake?
But for the most part, it was all stereotypes.
Well, Mary, isn't it good to see Schlepperman again, huh?
Yeah, but I wish he'd take that herring out of his hand while he's broadcasting.
And now, ladies and gentlemen.
It's Yiddish swing time. It's always springtime. Every Sunday at one.
The golden age of Yiddish radio lasted from the 1930s to the 1950s. The people who created these magnificent programs, some of the best and most daring radio ever broadcast, have been largely completely forgotten. Like C. Israel Lutsky, the combative, obnoxious radio host who was the first advice columnist of the air. Carl Reiner does the voiceover.
You, my dear friend, with your own blind monkey love, are responsible for your own son's situation. If you want,
and there was Nuchum Stutchkoff, the brilliant linguist who wrote some of the finest dramas ever on radio. Here, he introduces one of his own plays. Stutchkoff is portrayed by Eli Wallach.
We bring you a new episode of Round the Family Table, an episode which takes place in New York, but could have happened anywhere. In Philadelphia, Chicago, or anywhere where Jews live. The scene.
We've rescued goofy material, like tons and tons of commercials.
Long and I'll sing, Zolstein is clinging, it's Eastside Gluckster's restaurant and caterers.
And serious programs like Reunion, where Holocaust survivors were reunited on the air.
And all this time, you haven't seen your father.
No, sir.
We want you to turn around, see if you know him. Ladies and gentlemen, that's really a touching scene. The father and son got each other in their arms. Tears of joy are going down their cheeks. And believe me, gentlemen and ladies that are listening to me now, I have never seen such a touching scene in all my life. Ladies and gentlemen, they stand together there in each other's arms, and the emotion of the moment is really too much for them.
Yiddish radio and Yiddish culture went into a free fall after World War II. Almost all of the Yiddish speakers in Europe were murdered during the Holocaust. And when it was formed in 1948, the State of Israel turned its back on Yiddish in favor of Hebrew. In the United States, Yiddish radio fell victim to the successful assimilation of Jews into American culture and the rise of television. But there were a few holdouts, like Ben Gehling in Boston.
Ladies and gentlemen,
the earliest surviving recording of a Yiddish program we have is his from 1933, and he stayed on the air until 1999 when he died at the age of 100, making him the longest running host in radio history.
If you wish to fill up your belly with gourmet food and the best of deli.
Ben Gehling loved to tell the story of his favorite guest, a violinist named Percy Brand, who came on his show shortly after he was released from Buchenwald.
I began interviewing him. He cried and I cried. And I said, well, let your fiddle talk. And it spoke to the hearts of people then. And even now after his death, Percy Brand, his name will never be forgotten.
Today, the last of the old-time East European native Yiddish speakers are dying off. For all intents and purposes, these recordings are our last visceral link back to a vibrant Yiddish culture.
No!
Mrs. Slefkovich, get out of this lesson, Mrs. Slefkovich.
What's the matter, Mama?
I think part of the thing in Jewish life is you want a kaddishal. You want someone who's going to say the prayer for the dead for you after you're gone. And we're giving a kind of a kaddish. We're remembering these people, and we're honoring them, and we're keeping their names fresh and their memories alive.
Mrs. Levine.
My name is Mef Portnoy.
Mrs. Miriam Stein.
Zvi Hirsch Yosef Ben Rabbi Yankov Mendel Halevi Skula.
Their work still has great power. Their gift still has something to share with a whole new generation of listeners. And it melts away all of the intervening years.
Would you give her the $6 in
but
current
imagine
payments?
Imagine what's happening to my heart
just
all the
answer
time.
My question,
my
sir.
Mother's staying away for a year, and she lives around
you.
The corner.
We heard you. Would
listening
you
to these voices not only allows us to remember these people, but just for a brief moment allows them to be with us again, to be a part of us, to live again.
This concludes our Yiddish evening program for tonight. We leave here now to return again tomorrow afternoon at 1:30. Until then, good night.
And this concludes this edition of At the Tone with DJ Frederick. If you'd like to correspond with me, my email address is frederick@christiannewage.com. That's frederick@christiannewage.com. So wherever you are on the planet, thank you for listening to At the Tone, and thank you for listening to the greatest radio station that's not on shortwave, the Global Voice.
huh? See the robin up there? It's up on my side. You see it in the grass? It's over there. See him?
Yeah.